Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns on individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Pro wrestling, or we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, AEW decides to run away from the fight. The lazy river of wrestling criticism this week's TV, and a post-mortem on Clash in Paris and Invader Club. Chris has selected Alex Wright versus Diamond Dallas Page from 96, is it, Chris?
I think it's 96, yeah. It would be 96 because it's in the beginning of Page's face turn. He hasn't gotten all
he's
the way
still a
there
heel at this point.
He's still a heel, but like the crowd's turn. It's actually a good pairing. I mean, I'll talk about more, but it's a good pairing in the sense of Wright was beginning to turn heel with crowds and Page was beginning to turn face. And so the pairing made a lot of sense for that reason as
there
well.
There we go. I was going to tell you to adjust your camera.
I was trying to get Hayes into the, I know. Look at this beautiful
hazy
face. Yes.
Cat. Need more cat content for super fan Trisha.
And for Cody. Cody likes seeing Hazy on in the mix
too,
here.
Yes. I'm Jeff Hawkins. He's Chris Novembruno.
and she's Hazy the cat.
And Hazy the cat and Yuffie somewhere around there too. Family meeting right now. I sarcastically told Chris to record a high wattage and he did it. So I'm not sure if I'm going to add it to the end of the show or put it on our semi-dormant Patreon, which only has 12 people and only 7 of whom pay. But Chris has shoulder surgery coming up. And if he chooses the entrepreneurial spirit to help pay for his surgery and wants to go with some sympathy subscriptions, it's the beginning of the month. So, Chris, I am going to leave it to you as a somewhat capitalist.
No, you know what? You know what? I really do have the time on my hands, and I just discovered that there is a new trove of Eric Watts matches, and so no longer do I have to dig through the asshole of Daily Motion to try to find Eric Watts matches. Someone decided to bequeath me with more Eric Watts content, which is why we have this classic, this etude of the headlock.
It's
that
Eric
is the match.
Watts versus Frankie Lancaster. I'm guessing then patreon.com/shakethemropes.
Sub it up, baby. Sub it up. Let's
here we go.
Let's support this show. Let's make this the biggest show.
All proceeds go to Chris. I don't take a dime of it until it gets successful, and then I'm coming in and taking my share.
And then he'll get his cup. But yeah, no, come on, help me out, help a brother out. I'll make you some high wattage. It's gonna be stupid. I'm not I'm not guaranteeing good content. It's always been a dumb show. I want to make that really clear.
No, that's the tagline of this show too. It's not going to be good content, but it's going to be content.
Yeah, it's always been a dumb show. That might be the tagline.
We are the Golden Corral of wrestling podcasting. It's content and a lot of it. It's just not necessarily high quality. Oh. But let's start with the story that has gotten F4W interminable audio. Mike, Chris, if you think I am a power talker over you, may I present Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez over this today. First reported by Fightful, All Out's main card will now begin at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday, September 20th. That means at least most of the show will have already happened by the time WWE's PLE, a.k.a. WrestlePalooza, which is premiering on ESPN, begins at 7 p.m. Eastern. The original start time for All Out was slated to be 8 p.m. To quote Monty Python from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, run away! Chris, your thoughts? Was this smart? Was this dumb? Was this just bound to happen? Are they now WWE's Punk?
I don't want to read too much into this. I will ask this question,
Let me give you some context. Let me give you some context on the Dave and Brian conversation, which I alluded to. Brian's thinking is you go head-to-head anyway to see where you stack up, and then you can plan accordingly, because if you run away now, they're going to follow you next time you run away, possibly.
Going back to my leading question then. So
okay.
My understanding on the ratings here for Dynamite is they recently had a show either this week or last week that was in the fours.
I will get to Dynamite ratings later. I have those.
Is that correct? Is that a correct number?
In the fours?
Yeah, like 400 something.
No. This week was the second lowest of in history.
Okay, so then my point here is that they don't need a heat check. They know that they're losing. They know that they have not been gaining ground against WWE. WWE is not as weak as they were narratively or even interest-wise 6 years ago. And they are enjoying a bit of a high water period, even though it's kind of ebbed down slightly. They're still doing good business right now, and they're doing good business with former AEW talents, which has to sting doubly, right? You're kind of getting your ass kicked by CM Punk and Cody Rhodes, and that stinks. And they don't need a heat check. They don't need to run against WWE because they're not going to win against WWE, and they know that. I think this is this, to me, is worthy of applause for Tony Khan or whoever helped make this decision, because it's realistic.
I am sort of sympathetic that you go with what you were going to go with. Dave's feeling was they don't have the card to go head to head, and you wait for until you have the card to do it. I am more on your side of they don't have the product to go head to head.
Yeah, they don't have the cards.
But I think Brian's point here is that your fans are your fans. Now, there is some crossover, and they can watch WrestlePalooza later at any time or whatever. But your fan base is pretty much your fan base for AEW. You're not going after new fans necessarily. So why not just do it? And there's a part of me that goes, okay, I can get down with that too.
But they also like to feature Edge and Christian heavily on this show right now, and John Moxley. So, aren't you though with those selections in top characters really trying to capture that WWE fan?
That is a point that is not said enough, Chris. My answer is yes. I think they are still. I think they're still.
Yeah, I think the whole Moxley run, especially with the iteration of Moxley, he is his more Dean Ambrose, Dean Ambrose. It's a mishmash of all the different pastiche of characters that Moxley did during his run in WWE.
It's the man, they'd be great without the shackles of Vince McMahon. Let's see what they can do. That's the entire selling point of these guys for the most part. I just think overall, and this is more Lazy River than anything, I think AEW has a problem with world building. They don't build characters. They don't build feuds.
You know, here's the thing too. All-star stuff. This week's Dynamite, they did a lot of promo work. They were just all boring as hell.
Yes.
I was sitting there going like, damn, this is the monkey's paw episode for me. They finally do the amount of promo work that I've been asking for. It's just seg after seg after seg. These are all go to sleep promos.
And these guys, well, that's a problem. And I've been sounding this alarm for the history of this show, is that the independents don't teach you how to do money promos. They don't teach you how to do fight promos. They don't. You do.
Well, they don't teach you how to tell a story over 4 weeks, because you don't have to, because you're just performing on a card.
Exactly. And that's a problem. And it's a problem with Tony Khan, whose interest is mostly in booking matches, not in building feuds. And look, AEW is not in trouble financially. Anybody who says that is ridiculous.
But no, they're in trouble in terms of interest in that. There clearly is an ebb away from them, selection over selection of time. However you want, you know, if you want to do this 6 months by 6 months, if you want to do this year by year, there is a clear direction since that one time they popped the million rating with Punk and now, and it's all ebbing the wrong way. It's not ebbing to oblivion necessarily, but you know, we thought we found the bottom at 600,000. Then we hit 500,000. Then we got below 500,000. You're like, okay, yo, all right. Maybe we're still cruising.
It's easier to get AEW pay-per-views. They're coming to HBO Max. Starting this Friday, U.S. subscribers can purchase AEW All Out for the exclusive price of $39.99, $10 less than you'd get on other services, etc. Okay, we'll see how that goes.
This is a company that absolutely should just be giving those away with that HBO subscription.
I'm kind of with you.
Take the loss leader on that, boys.
But you know, but it's also one of those things where once you give people those free tastes, they're not going to want to go back. See WWE, but at the same time,
yeah. But like, if you could go to your partner at HBO and say, we're driving subscriptions to your service, mm-hmm. that all of a sudden is absolutely of value and utility and demonstrably useful in an argument where you're trying to negotiate for more money in the future. So I think they're shooting themselves in the foot here with this, because the alternative, this model, is why the hell am I paying twice? I already paid for HBO. What the hell do you mean that I have to pay now for a pay-per-view on a pay service? What the shit is that?
Tangent, I am tired of this. I pay for these services so I don't get commercials and stuff, and now everybody is adding tiers because they want to add more commercials. Amazon Prime, the Red Zone is going to not be commercial free for the first time ever, because Disney gonna Disney, and everything Disney touches turns to ass. See Star Wars, see Marvel.
Oh, Star Wars doesn't exist for me anymore. I had to just let it go. It's not that any one of them isn't good, right? Is that the universe now that Star Wars is, there's no quality control.
Right.
There's no,
it's fancy.
There is.
It's fancy.
Well, and it's Star Wars is booked like Tony Khan books AEW now, where wouldn't it be cool if this happened? Wouldn't it be cool if this happened? Wouldn't it be cool if this happened? And I miss bringing it back to wrestling. I miss having the Booker in George Lucas. I miss having the Ghetto, or that, even Dusty, someone who's like trying to tell us, I'm trying to tell Hollywood movies, baby. Someone who is like,
that's good.
Yeah. Someone who actually cares about beginning, middles, and ends.
Yeah, Dusty's thing was he liked John Wayne, so he booked everything in his stuff like a John Wayne movie, and it turned out to be like a John Wayne movie a lot of times. Good guys, bad guys, all that other stuff. No, I agree.
And the Horseman totally worked as his bandana villains in his John Wayne movies.
Yeah, it worked until Dusty got a lot of power, and then Arn and Tully were like, you're not paying us as much as Paul Ellering. We're out of here. All right, here we go. Numerous people of influence within WWE have pushed for WWE to hold a major event in China in the coming years. Specifically, Hong Kong was mentioned as a location with a PLE event discussed internally within WWE as a possibility. Here we go. China is the grand... Everybody wants to be in China. Hollywood, WWE, AEW was, and then they kind of had a falling out. I remain consistent, and I don't want to hear from AEW fans about evil regimes and whatnot. Here comes the plausible deniability part.
Yeah, and I remain consistent in my moral validity of boycotts, because I would 100% love to see people calling for a boycott of China and doing activities over there. And it's a damn shame that apparently we had some sort of moral referendum. I don't recall voting. Where we decided boycotts are bad. But get ready for China, Jeff.
My uncle was a dissident of Mao. He escaped, came to this country, and they killed his family. Or at least
boycotts are mean. The alternative is you support the mean regime. And that's nicer than being mean.
Well, cheap stuff. That's all we want, right? Yeah, I...
Convenient allies. We like that. That's why we don't boycott.
I will say the best advertisement for standing firm against China is the former Xia Li, who seems to be having a blast just working out all day. She has become such a muscle hamster and still wrestling for TNA. So... Yeah, and she doesn't want to go back.
Good for her. Good. No, I'm glad she's happy here.
Yes.
No, seriously. Yeah, like, hey, look, obviously I'm pro-immigration. Yes, and I'm very happy for anyone who comes here and is able to make a better life for themselves. So there you go.
I'm all for acclimation. Here we go, Chris. As alluded to earlier, Dynamite did 472,000 and a 0.11 in the 18 to 49 demo. It's a decline of 15.4% from last week and is also the lowest number the show has done since October 8th, 2024. It's the second lowest rating Dynamite has done in its history, regardless of day or time slot. Dave is baffled because he doesn't think tennis would affect it this much. There were no NFL or college games on. Could possibly be the problem here.
Yes, God.
That's not Dave. That's me being sarcastic.
No, I know. Dave assembling the Avengers on a desperate search for a clue.
Dude, his recent white whale right now.
And I love Dave. I feel like every 2 to 3 weeks we have a Dave on the deepest hunt for an obvious clue of story.
Netflix numbers are his white whale right now because he wants to prove that not everybody that somehow WWE is flailing in the ratings for Netflix, and I don't understand why, because they're still doing sold out houses for Raw.
So, I mean, I'll say this much. I tend to think that ratings, especially when you're watching, like looking at like seg one, seg two or whatever, getting a little granular here, I tend to think that they are lagging indicators of how people liked the show last week as much as anything, rather than direct feedback about the current show you're watching. I think the dangerous thing for AEW, internally, if they're looking at this, is going like, I don't know, man, it feels like people didn't like the show last week. And did people like this show this week? Boy, because this was kind of a rough sled.
Well,
that remains to be seen right now. There's not a lot of indicators right now that it's going to be a nice snapback the following week.
I just don't think Tony gets Tony is booking for the message board wrestling. Tony's the type of person that when he hears somebody goes to WWE is going, well, what about their Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame case? That kind of fan. And that's not what this business is about. And I think there's
It has almost nothing to do with the business
with that. And you're doing these 8-man all-star tags, and don't get me wrong, they're fun party matches, but you see a party match every week. You see Jet Speed in these things every week. And once you've seen Jet Speed in one match, you've kind of seen them in all the matches. They're doing the hits. But you've never given us a reason to give a crap about Kevin Knight or Mike Speedball Bailey. You've never given us a reason for that in terms of characterization, in terms of what they want out of their AEW careers, why they are in this fictional fighting company, et cetera, et cetera. You just say that they're really good wrestlers on commentary.
Yay. Well, and there's this other missed link about the Hall of Fame thing, right? The Hall of Fame style arguments do often hinge upon, yeah, but did that guy draw? I have heard in years past arguments where guys were sort of marginal, you know, talents that were maybe right on the edge of Hall of Fame worthy at that level. But then when we started getting granular about their ability to draw a big house, their ability to work with a big guy and draw a big show or whatever, that moved them over the hill. And then conversely, there have been other wrestlers, great wrestlers, who are not going to be in the Hall of Fame. I'll give you an example. I love Chris Kanyon. I think he's a fantastic wrestler. However, I think the argument for him would be a massive uphill sled because, yes, he innovated a lot in terms of moves. I mean, you can, like, really rattle off a list of 25, 30 wrestlers relatively effortlessly who have picked up a Kanyon move here or there and worked it into their offense. But the guy never drew a dime. Right. And that hurts the Hall of Fame argument big time. And I'm saying this as a big Kanyon fan.
I think it's also pendulum swinging. I think we've gone because like there's this famous interview with Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, where he calls WWE a parody of professional wrestling. And I think the pendulum has swung, and that pendulum was called Ring of Honor, where it's 5'6" guys who are skinny. They're kind of in shape, but they're not giant muscular dudes who are doing grappling holds and stuff like that. And that became wrestling is for everybody. There's no more gatekeeping in it necessarily in terms of you need to be 6'5", 275, because that's what Vince McMahon and stuff wanted. But if you watch wrestling throughout the years, there was a certain aura you had to carry yourself with when there was gatekeeping in wrestling in terms of toughness, in terms of being able to fight, in terms of being able to portray yourself as somebody who could kick somebody's ass. And
like what you're arguing is almost like, not to get too heady here, but it's almost like a reverse Hegelian construction. And I think it's basically right that if you look back into the late 80s, in through the middle 90s there, that we see the synthesis. And now what you see between McMahon's version of wrestling circa the aughts and then Ring of Honor, that style of wrestling, which, you know, morphed into AEW style of wrestling, which makes sense that AEW wanted to absorb Ring of Honor into their oeuvre as well. That style of wrestling is like the antithesis. So Vince McMahon looked at like all those fit guys doing cool moves and telling stories and stuff. And was like, you know, the best part of that is I like looking at the fit dudes. Let you ponder that.
Vince McMahon the spectacle was all about the
and
spectacle
the fit dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And I get that. Like, and I understand the negativities of that too, because it made it broader and stuff like that. And it took away from, the manliness, to be honest with it, because you hear it all the time in both NWA and UWF/Mid-South promos is they're always clowning on the WWF and what they've done to wrestling in terms of, you know, what they do to the guys, how it's all just kind of broad appeal and dumbing it down. And
it's dumbed down, right? Yeah, no, it's an abstraction. Like Daniel Simon with parody, I'd argue both are sort of abstractions from the form. Like in this sort of Hegelian like construction, the with Ring of Honor, it's like they go, they look at the WWE stuff and they go, yeah, like, but like this is a company whose vision does not incorporate a Psicosis, Rey Mysterio, a La Parca, Ultimo Dragon, any, all these cruiserweights, they are not able to successfully incorporate this into their vision. So then they build a wrestling that's kind of really centered around just that, not having the guys who look the part, not having the great characters, right. Moves will carry.
It's the Tanahashi thing about how WWE is McDonald's. But the thing about McDonald's is they have a system, and they know they have consistency. They know how to build. They know how to build stories for the next pay-per-view. They know how to build the views. Now, they're not always great, and they're not always interesting, but they know how to do it. And yeah, there has to be a happy medium, and I'm getting tired of trying to find one, to be honest with you, Chris.
No, it's tough because I had some hope that WWE was going to regress more towards the mean.
Yeah.
And they have in some ways, but then sometimes, like, you know, looking at the Cena turn, for example, it's still like, all right, this company can only cook sometimes. This is a four burner stove in which the three of the burners work.
This is a good segue into my last story. That I've decided to skip that Kenny Omega's taking time off because it was planned prior to All Out. He's going to Japan. He had diverticulitis, but he had planned a vacation. But anyways, it's possible the talent themselves don't understand professional wrestling. So here's Ronda Rousey talking in an interview. Quote, "The fact that they had me fighting Alexa Bliss at all was effing ridiculous." That's me censoring. Rousey said about facing the smaller Bliss. "And you want to know why they had me against Alexa Bliss? Because she had the most merch sales at the time on that side. Like, what the F? Like, that's your decision-making process?" Rhonda.
Oh.
Rhonda, come here. Come here.
Yeah, sit down. Take a knee, chief.
Take a knee.
Yeah.
First of all, this is fake. So we can build this fight however we want to do it. Number two, do you know what it means when they're pairing you with the person with the most merchandise sales? This means they're pairing you with a star, Ronda Rousey. And it's not that you're not a star. It's that you're not necessarily a wrestler up to the level of Alexa Bliss, who is a star. So we're actually doing you a favor, Ronda Rousey.
Favor. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, nothing is a more damning indictment on your character. Nothing is a more damning indictment on your character than saying a stupid thing arrogantly and confidently.
They're pairing me with this woman who talks to a doll and whatever. I go, what the hell do you think wrestling is these days? And you're in the
She's like not even the same size as me, and she's selling a ton of merchandise right now. And they want me to go out there and tell a story with her. What the hell is that?
WWE all of a sudden becoming Bill Watts in 1984. Nobody would believe if Alexa Bliss and I got into a fight or whatever. It's like, do you understand what company you're in right now, Ronda Rousey? I understand you trained with Billy Robinson and Gene LaBelle and other, you know, shooters who did pro wrestling in Japan and whatnot. You know,
Barnett. But like LaBelle could actually explain to you what wrestling's about. That wouldn't be something that's lost on LaBelle.
Look, I don't want you pairing me with that woman who makes a lot of money selling cheap crap made in China to children. No. Give me
Ronda Rousey. She needs to find the mute button for herself and just smash it.
I read this? I go, do the workers even understand that this is show business?
She should get Botox into her tongue so that she can't formulate words fully, so that she has to write them out and hand them over to someone else to read them and decide if they need to be read aloud.
Oh, and by the way, Rhonda, if you could cut a decent promo, we would need to, we could match you with someone with, we could match you with Sonya Deville if you'd like. I mean,
No, Jeff.
I like Sonya Deville a lot, but it's not like she was moving merch or a big star in the company, but she had MMA skills. Okay, we'll match you up against Sonya Deville in that program. And then you'll say, why isn't this program over and why am I not working with bigger stars?
Here's, of course, the problem with this. Your problem diagnosis is completely right, of course. However, your solution requires Ronda Rousey to talk and not be stupid. A clear and glaring oversight in your problem solving. Good God.
Ronda Rousey could kick my ass, so I'm not going to call her stupid because I'm local to her, possibly. So I met her. She's a sweetheart. I met her at PWG. She was very nice, but this just boggles my mind.
I'm going to file this in my hall of courage of conviction, Jeffrey. I'm proud of you for this moment. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, I know. Medal of Honor, all that. I read this. I went, do you understand what pro wrestling is when you got into it and you were a full-time performer for years? It's about selling merchandise. And being a star and doing good matches, but having a better feud with other stars and building interest in your pro. I can't, Chris. I can't. I'm okay. Go to AEW. That's fine. You can have your matches and someone will watch. And actually, I think she's pregnant, so she can't. But that'll do it for the news. We're waist deep and having baptisms in the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watch, whatever we had time for. Clash in Paris, I thought was pretty good, but it was mostly a sandwich show. It started, Alvarez complained about that opening angle being an hour, but it was an interesting hour in which Braun Breaker and Tribal Thief, I forgot his name already.
Bronson Reed.
Bronson Reed, thank you. Destroyed Roman Reigns. It was perfectly fine. John Cena and Logan Paul, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Logan was working his ass off. John Cena was deciding to do homages to people he's not going to be able to face on this tour. So he's like doing like AJ Styles moves and Claudio Castagnoli moves and Dolph Ziggler moves. And he's out there on that retirement tour going, I'm just going to try doing this weird stuff. And I'm kind of here for it. It makes him far more interesting, you know, than just going through the John Cena hits. And then the four-way was good. And, you know, the ending, Becky Lynch belongs in the Vision. And it's perfectly fine. And it's also made her far more interesting. Because Theater Kid Becky is terrible. Theater Kid Becky, with some guidance from Paul Heyman and whatnot, and actually bringing up certain real life issues, is great. Because, not talking out of school here, but when CM Punk came back to the company, the person in that relationship who didn't want to work with Punk and didn't want her husband working with Punk was Becky Lynch. Seth Rollins was fine with it all. Becky Lynch had a few misgivings, let's put it that way, and wasn't appreciative of what Punk had said about the women's locker room compared to AEW's locker room, et cetera, et cetera. There was some real life things. And I believe during those slaps, like it's been a couple years, but I believe there was some, a little bit of animus in those, but it's interesting. And yes, it's looking like AJ Lee is coming back to the company tomorrow in Chicago. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun.
The tag title match, nothing to write home about, but I don't think the Gacy Dexter Lumis team is horrible. I don't like the Street Profit breaking up angle again. I think that's dull as hell. And I hate the way they do these breakup angles where they're all friends until it's time to ring the bell. And then all of a sudden they're just playing to the back of the room with how much they can't get along, as if they didn't have a plan coming into the match. Becky and Nikki Bella was atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah. That.
But that's my review. Chris admittedly watched a lot more of the weekly TV. I kind of scanned it because let's
start with NXT, because I'm not going granular this week. I gotta go top line and vibes on this show here, which is like, just when you think this version of NXT couldn't get any stinkier, now they're incorporating speed into NXT.
Yes.
Which makes NXT feel so low rent. This, we are doing a promotion inside of a promotion inside of a promotion inception thing. It's TNA speed NXT. It makes everything seem lower rent. It was one thing with the TNA crossover. The speed matches add absolutely nothing. I'll kind of continue on here. I think
okay.
Jada Parker and Lash Legend, once again, it's like, I watch a Lash Legend match and I'm like, how many chances has this person gotten compared to other talents who had more talents?
Huh.
And dude, they've given her so many different opportunities, and she grows, she progresses so slowly. There have been better.
I'm not as heavy negative on Lash as you are, but I get it.
No, it bothers me, not even necessarily because of anything specific about Lash. It is that her talent level is remarkably unremarkable. Okay. It's notable how much opportunity she is getting in a company where opportunity is at such a premium so often. And I find it irksome, because there are other people that we've seen in the past who we've liked, who just haven't gotten what we felt like was a good shake of the tail.
I'll do a couple of rando hits here, because I was just mostly annoyed by NXT this week. I like Joe Hendry. I don't love Joe Hendry. I like Joe Hendry. He can be an amusing character at times. I think his wrestling is LA Knight level, maybe a little lower in terms of he can do moves and stuff like that, but he's never going to interest me.
LA Knight's such a good comp to Joe Hendry.
I took it from you, so I will give you credit for that regardless. I don't want people yelling Joe Hendry's name in the middle of a match and him appearing. That is just lameness to me, Chris.
He's turning into a punchline.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's Joe Hendry in the closet. You know, like, what's in my pocket? Oh, it's Joe Hendry.
He comes out of refrigerators. He comes out of holes.
He's Hornswoggle. He's like a more glorified Hornswoggle. He doesn't just live under the ring. He literally just phase distorts and appears wherever his name is said, because he's so vain. I don't know. Again, I don't understand how this is super endearing beyond a certain point either.
And I'll tell you, they did a cardinal sin in professional wrestling this week on NXT, and it pissed me off to the point where I didn't want to watch the show anymore. Xia Brookside is a TNA talent now. She used to be in NXT UK. She is the son of a trainer at NXT. Or son, a daughter of NXT. She's the daughter of Robbie Brookside, who is an NXT trainer. We have a video package of her hyping her going to be on this show. Chris, they did a video package of somebody they then immediately beat.
They did this with Kelly Armstrong, too. I found the Jordan Grace Kelly Armstrong match to be a bizarre pairing.
F all the way off with this.
Like, what was that about? Yeah.
If you are, again, television time is at a premium. Things need to be important on this show. And you're showing me video packages of people who are about to get beat that I'm not supposed to care about anymore. That's the thing you're telling me. Don't care about this person. They got beat. which is an AEW problem all the time. Oh, here's Mike Bailey. He's premiering in this tournament. Oh, he had a good match, but he got beat. So who cares? This business is based on Pavlov conditioning.
Conditioning, yeah.
It's based on conditioning, and people will root for the people you tell them to root for, and they won't care about the people you tell them not to care about. So don't do that. That's bad. That's bad for people in there. It is, and it's just one of these things where it's like, okay, how about instead of that, you hype up somebody who's worth a damn on your roster and make us excited. Well,
and NXT did this with Chase and Briggs, right? Chase is nowhere near hot enough to where Briggs dismantling him means anything at this point. There was a point where Andre Chase was connected enough with this live audience that you absolutely could have told the story you were trying to tell with Briggs here. But like now, he is in like a cover band version of Chase U. It's, you know, like it's like Chase AP classes. It's not even a community college anymore.
We get the mystery. Ooh, boots, motorcycle, badasses coming to NXT. Is it possibly the Undertaker as American Badass Taker, whatever? And it's just Josh Briggs, who we've seen for the past 6 weeks.
Yeah. And then speaking of pants, leather pants, we must finish off our NXT review with a discussion about my man, my new favorite character on NXT, Pants Guy.
From Dark.
Because yes, now that they have decided, Jeff, on the characterization of Dark State, which to respect the sensibilities of everybody, leans towards the cultural backgrounds of three of the four members in a certain way. Their group dynamic, the way they converse and discuss with one another, is reflective of their backgrounds, as you might expect. And Pants Guy is now tasked with the unenviable and also hilarious task of characterizing himself as though these other three guys are his boys and they hang out together all the time. And it makes for some of my favorite on-screen acting on this entire show, because the three of them are doing one thing and then Pants Guy has to come in and be like, you know what? I am Pants Guy and I love hanging out with these guys, and we are going to wreak havoc on the NXT roster. Fear is, Dark is State. I'm Pants Guy.
Is Pant, remind me here, because I had tuned out, I think, by this point. Is Pants Guy the one that also makes the subtly gay jokes?
I think they did that a couple weeks ago, right? Yeah, like in earlier things. He always says,
we're going to pound his ass, and they just kind of go on with the promo.
Yeah, but this week they tried to do a menacing promo, and Pants Guy had to fit in with that. And he does not fit in with them, which is now, which I don't actually think, like in this promo, was not actually an intentional piece of characterization. It's just a failure to launch, and it makes it extremely compelling television for me.
Because I read the results, I decided not to revisit when Oba Femi and Ricky Starks, who were tag team partners,
I'm sick of Dark State matches. They stink. Dark State is such a crappy, crappy tag team.
They have no point.
They're
here to cause chaos, and they don't cause chaos. They're here to take.
This is subtraction by addition. I believe a fan of the show asked me weeks ago, before we ever saw him do anything on screen, what I thought of Shiger's or whatever, and I didn't have any thoughts on him at the time. I see flashes of character in this guy now. I just believe that this faction, every single one of these guys, will leave this faction and either do slightly more or a lot more than what they are currently doing, except for maybe Pants Guy.
No. Bookworm's going back to being a bookworm. You know that's going to happen. He's going to be an extra at NXT high school one day, sitting in a chair reading a book, and somebody's going to walk by.
That is true. He's going to get cut. State? Yes. Yeah, well, no, because he's getting cut because, like, now that they've made Dark State, he's in real trouble, that Dion Lennox, because they made Dark State kind of his idea. So when this thing tanks, and it will, he's done in the company.
They did nothing with the progression of the character as to how he got from bookworm to dark state. And that should be the narrative focus, or they should be, or what I thought it was going to be originally, I thought they were going to be thugs for Trick Williams in terms of protecting his title and stuff.
No, I mean, the story we got is we tried to do things the right way.
The right way.
And everyone just kept passing us up and keep taking our turn. And now we're taking our turn because they took our turn. And now we're turning the turns to make our turn ours.
I'm a rebel, Dottie. You understand? It's like
I'm Pants Guy.
They should just call him Pants Guy. That should be his name in Darkseid. I'm Pants Guy. It's Dion Lennox, these other two, Pants Guy.
I want him to essentially be a Pokemon who only says his name.
It's Pants Guy, a nickname? No.
Pants!
That'd actually be a great thing. That's like Jack Swagger doing the I like this hat gimmick.
Speaking of delusional people, I know this would never make the run sheet. Swagger, no,
it's Lazy River. It's good. We can deal with it.
Yeah. Swagger thinking that hat would have been the difference maker to him getting over or not.
It was over, dude. But it wasn't a main event.
It wasn't over like he's saying. He's no, I'm not saying it wasn't over. I'm saying there's such obvious shelf life to this. This is an 8 to 12 month gimmick.
It's a comedy gimmick. It's a comedy.
This is not Mr. Sacco, where it takes off and latches on forever.
I thought he was adequately used in AEW. I thought like the MMA match against Wardlow, I thought that was fun. Look, he was doing MMA training at the time, so he was kind of doing two jobs at once. I thought AEW did a great job with him. He was never going to be world champion because he has the star rating ceiling thing, which is what I'm officially coining that now. Is that you can get to a certain level in AEW, but then there's the star rating ceiling. And if you ain't at 4 stars or above, you ain't getting past the mid-card, kids.
Whereas, ironically, if you're capable of having a quote-unquote Meltzer-scale 5-star match, you can be entitled consideration even if you're missing some of the Hall of Fame fundamentals that you would normally need.
AR Fox fighting for another title or something. It's like, all right, fine. We'll go there.
Let's kick it to AEW.
Yes,
I guess
because you had thoughts on the promos as you alluded to during the news.
You know, here's the thing: it's not that any one of them stuck out as notably awful. It's just that every one of them was boring as hell. What was notable for me was we had more promos than usual, and they were all absolutely ho hum.
Gabe Kidd is overrated as a promo. I was told he was very good in New Japan, and I'm watching and I'm going, all right, I don't see it. I just don't. He's not menacing to me at all.
Right, yeah, he lacks presence. And like, Gabe Kidd and Kid in the Helmet, actually, like, I actually forgot that they were two different people. For a minute, I thought that was Josh out. I thought that was the other guy, the Callis guy. But it's just like, I don't know, man. We get to these main events where it's, you know, the Bucks yet again. And
womp, womp. Oh, we're poor now. Isn't this so hilarious and cute? And
it's the same energy that I felt watching Dark State in the main event tag match on NXT, where I'm just like, okay, so I'm done with this show now. I can move on. Like, and I start grabbing the fast forward button and start moving it along. Like, they are not main events. Yes, they're not. Neither one of those two teams, neither Dark State or the Bucks right now, are main event teams in the sense of, I will not change the channel during a television main event. This will keep me here through the end of the program. Like, these guys are, I'm leaving church early kind of material.
It's like rain on your wedding day. It's just, oh, look at us. We're so ironic. Oh, isn't that great? Oh, we have a new.
No, it reminds me of back when I was like in Catholic Mass as a kid or whatever. Like when we moved to Arizona, we had this one pastor, very long-winded, and you could tell when he was going to be particularly long-winded, including on the other side of communion. And like if he went long prior to communion, we were done because we knew that we were getting an extra, you know, bonus 30 where he was just talking about fundraising on the back end of communion. You know, some wrestling acts are cut out early type material, you know?
Just, I mean, how, like, don't get me wrong. I don't mind Oom-bop. I can listen to Oom-bop. It's fine.
Hey, actually the verses on Oom-bop are headier than you give it credit for.
Oh, I don't deny it.
No, check out the lyrics. There's actually more going on in Oom-bop lyrically than I think people realize.
It's, you know, it's one of those things, but you know, new.
It's about fair weather friends, Jeff. Legit is. It's good.
I'm aware. And who will love like you when you lose your hair? new Blake Christian has dropped in the form of Adam Priest. Okay, he's gonna team with the Workhorsemen. You know, he's we're gonna put him in matches, dude, and I'm just like, okay, whatever. But yeah, I thought Ricochet and the Gates of Agony had a decent promo, especially for Ricochet. It was not a great promo, but I think the Gates of Agony are starting to find themselves a bit.
They have a chemistry together. It's just, I mean, this is the other part of it. It's hard to promo when you don't really have a hell of a story to tell.
Right. And also Ricochet he's funny. Don't get me wrong. And the flake thing is good when he's doing and all that other stuff, but he's not an alpha in terms of leading this threesome. I am far more interested in, I believe it was Bishop Khan who just starts screaming into the camera. I'm like, all right, that dude scares the hell out of me. And I'm kind of here for it type of a thing.
Then we have Mark Briscoe and Lance Archer, which was a blast from 10 years ago. That was now just a black hole in the middle of my show here. Don Callis does something for somebody, but it ain't me, man.
He gets easy boos, but it's like one of those things where it's like he's menacing.
He is. World. I hate your local sports team as a character.
It's a little Ms. Heady, and the thing is, the problem is, it's like you want him to be Gary Hart, but he's Jim Cornette. Like when he's angry, he's kind of interesting and stuff, but then he's going to wear the weird shoes with no socks and do a pratfall here and there and act like a weakling when somebody goes to hit somebody or something like that. And you're just like, then it becomes slapstick. There's something for me missing in the Don Callis family presentation, but I get that it's pro wrestling. It's supposed to be that way, but I want this family.
Well, you know, part of the thing with the Cornette thing, right? Like in those Cornette angles, Cornette always had a scheme, and that scheme ran multiple weeks sometimes. And also sometimes worked. Like, you know, his little schemes would sometimes pay off. Whereas Callis kind of consistently doesn't win the big one, it feels like.
Right.
You know,
it's almost a Bobby Heenan thing where, oh, my family will never win the big title. Although his family has titles, they just don't matter necessarily.
Well, I guess there was the one time he was managing Andre. Was Andre in the family at that point?
Oh, no. No, he was with DiBiase.
When he was champion?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think. No, I was talking about Callis, though, not winning the big one.
Well, no, I agree. No, I mean, yeah, like Callis, it's the problem that continues to be on this show, which is who is the main heel faction? You know, like if you had to make like a food chain, you would be so hard pressed to make a food chain of this company. And I think that that's to this company's detriment.
It's your point next. I'll be right back, but I'm listening.
All right. So I'm going to, I guess, move on here from the main show. Let's move it over to WWE here. I think we should probably go ahead and pick it up with CM Punk and Becky Lynch. Long promo to close out the show here. This On the other hand, absolutely, or a long promo here to be the penultimate segment of the show before we get to Jey Uso and LA Knight. I'm not gonna lie, Uso and LA Knight are kind of another one of those teams that doesn't quite hold me in the main event. I just don't find those two very compelling. But to bring it to Punk and Lynch specifically here in our penultimate segment, I thought this is the most entertaining Becky's been in quite some time here.
Yes,
I think
I
that
agree.
her and Punk had good on-screen chemistry. I think she works well as an adjunct for Seth and to add additional tension to the vision. I think the fourth wall breakery at this stage works, and I think helps with the vision because I think, you know, like, seems like some of the characterization around the vision is like literally dictating who's worthy of being on the show or not.
Well, she's not trying to be an edge. Yeah, she's not trying to be an edgelord here. She's being serious instead of funny, and it works for her. I do. And Punk just brings the intensity, and both of those work so well together. I'm going to be interested in AJ Lee when she gets that microphone for the first time. Because AJ Lee...
Crowd's going to be there for her, but yes, it's going to be interesting to see what she has to say.
But she also had... I mean, like, if you go back and you watch... Like, I mean, she'd occasionally put a little shootiness in her promos and her sarcasm. She has picked up a lot from her husband in terms of... She can eat you alive on a promo, and not necessarily in the good way here and there. So I'm interested. It's also one of those things when she left, this was right at the, at almost the dawn of the quote unquote horsewomen coming in era. And the narrative was always, well, Paige is on that level, but she's had to wrestle with AJ Lee and not great opponents, et cetera, et cetera. Or that AJ Lee would be, AJ Lee.
It's not fair.
Opponent.
One of these years, one of these decades, Paige is going to finally get that good opponent and really show us all what she's got.
And people were also kind of burying AJ Lee as needing better opposition, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, well, I think they were good, but, you know, I'll be interested to see her in-ring skills and how they've gone from here and there. The rest of the show. I mean, it was there. I still love Ludwig Kaiser as El Grande Americano.
I do too. He's so great as El Grande Americano.
It's funny because going into Vader Club, I was trying to think of a corollary for Alex Wright.
Ludwig Kaiser.
Alex Wright is more flippy to Ludwig Kaiser, but still.
But also one of these guys who's sneaky athletic. That height and everything, because Alex Wright's like 6'3", 6'4".
He's big when you see him.
Dude, his athleticism's real. Like, this is a thing in going back. It's why I picked him out. In going back to the television of yesteryear, now with like a different eye, an older eye, there are some guys that I definitely am like, I think I underappreciated what this dude brought in terms of talent to the ring. And Alex Wright is a guy who I think was legitimately talented at a number of the tools. I think he was good at crowd connection, whether he was a babyface or as a heel. I mean, initially, he came out in that leather jacket and that little dance step with the hip and everything. Women loved that. And yes, everyone who's seen it knows how to emulate it and has emulated it at some point. Yeah, like... I'm looking.
That's the most I'll ever dance on this show, by the way.
No, I know, right? Like, he talked. I watched an interview in prepping for this segment. I watched an interview where he even talked about picking up that step. Where he was just like, I was at the club one night, and there was this guy doing that stupid dance, and he basically just lifted it off of this dude.
He was he was the victim. We're just gonna go right into Vader Club because I got nothing else for anything else. But he was the victim. I mean, he was a victim of circumstance and bad timing. Because he was young, he came. This is basically his excursion coming to WCW.
WCW.
And there was no room for him to grow because you had Hogan and all his boys who knew how to work, or at least work the style they were going to work in there. So it's one of those.
And he had had some preliminary success in 94 and 95 when he first arrived in terms of catching a little bit of crowd connection beyond expectations.
And WCW was right to kind of put the rocket on him as white meat babyface, who was a bit of a thirst trap for the ladies and all these other things that used to be old school, you know, thing.
He makes the shirt off leather jacket thing work, and not everybody can, right? Like, it's a certain guy who can make the no shirt leather jacket thing work, because there's like Vince Steele of Motley Crue doing that now, and then there's Alex Wright.
Right, and but it runs into the comedy slash, if you want to go with acting type in a theater group or whatever, problem where your first audition is what people remember the most, and they don't see you growing from that necessarily as you get into subsequent auditions and stuff. So as he remained in the WCW system, he just got lost. Now, they tried the Berlin thing, and that was, I mean, it was an interesting attempt.
That was also bad timing, too. The company was in a bad point. They weren't really able to kind of figure out what to do with Berlin as a character. And, like, I mean, the other thing is Alex Wright had aged out of teen heartthrob Alex Wright at that point. You know,
right, he needed to become a man. He needed to become manly now. And it wasn't when he was just so kind of skinny and wasn't really bulking up any, which would have hurt his gimmick. But at the same time, it would have made him more mature and actually gotten male fans behind him instead of, oh, you're pretty boy German. We want to watch you get beat up because you're a flaky dancing guy. DDP at this time is interesting to me, because I am full-on old-school DDP more than new-school wrestling Monday Night Wars DDP. I love the Stogie. I love the old AWA. Good God! You know, kind of from him, it always made me pop. I liked him with the Vegas connection. I liked that DDP more than I liked self-high-five, Nirvana, babyface. I will never deny that he was more over as a babyface and that he had that certain underdog thing going. I will never deny that. But I loved heel DDP a lot. And I thought he had a lot of charisma, because, like, he was one of the first guys in AWA I saw when he was towering over Paul Diamond and Pat Tanaka as their manager with Bad Company, who I've talked about here as one of my favorite teams. But, you know, DDP is 6'7" or something. I mean, he is a big friggin' dude. I think 6'7", he might be a little bit short.
I think it's like more like 6'5", 6'6". But, yeah, no, he's tall. Yeah, he's tall. Like, when he was teaming with Karl Malone, he wasn't that much shorter than Karl Malone.
But watching him here in the pink and kind of doing the suck it things, pointing to his crotch, and he still has the walking stick with him from his Atlanta bar bouncer, titty bar bouncer day type stuff. But you could see it here. I thought he gave him a lot, but this was almost a glorified squash, even though Wright did get those aerial moves and stuff. They were all instantly put the kibosh on.
I think that's the right format too, because the crowds here are turning on Wright and turning towards DDP as well. So this is actually a double turn. Not like, this is not the double turn,
this is
maybe you might call it ships passing the night. Like, one guy's going one way, the other guy's going another way. And this match is meant to reflect that. And WCW is kind of good at that.
I have the Ronda Rousey quote just in my head as I'm watching this. Could you believe that they had the nerve to put me in the ring with DDP?
I mean, the guy
who was over and doing yoga stuff and.
I also just love how the Diamond Cutter truly comes out of nowhere, not. Yes. Randy Orton, mimetically, we're just going to keep saying out of nowhere, but it absolutely has, like, big setups that you usually see coming. I love the finish on this match. Is such a classic DDP-style finish where we're going for this, we're going for this, we're going for this. Oh, we got you in the Diamond Cutter, you're done.
Yeah,
that's what I loved about him. It was so much more spontaneous than, like, the stunner.
And it was such an antithesis to WWE, who always goes, okay, Jake the Snake has to do the short arm clothesline before he does the DDT.
Yes.
And that way the audience can get behind it and cheer for it and chant for it beforehand. Here, it goes back to the wrestling of my youth, where it's like, you just pull this move out, and that's what you're going to end with. You don't really I mean, you don't – you had signature moves.
You have a sequence of builds to this, yeah.
But it wasn't set up finisher necessarily. It's, oh, I can pull this out at any time and beat you. And that made his matches exciting. And I really – yeah, I'm with you on that.
It's, you know, it's not like this is an all-time classic or whatever. No. It's just – it has – there are things about Alex Wright's wrestling that I wanted to talk about. And then for me, mid-era DDP, there's so much to like about his match. They avoiding the five moves of doom. And what WCW did – very effectively during this period, a period where they're not always consistent for sure, is they really conditioned their audience to expect the unexpected out of a Page finishing sequence. To the point, like, I can remember Michael Buffer sort of like going like, the man who can hit the diamond cutter out of anywhere. You know, like basically he's even telling the audience like that, like his finish can come out of nowhere. And of course they paid like $500,000 for Michael Buffer to say that one sentence.
A million.
My bad. I faded myself.
That was good Michael Buffer in there. Dusty, what are you doing here? Hey guys, Alexa Bliss.
We're making Hollywood films, daddy.
Yeah, we make movies. Thank you, Vince. We'll end it there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I'll pick something for next week. I'm thinking I'm going to go in the Tully neighborhood again. I'm kind of in the mood for another Tully match. He's such a good brat. I love him so much. Maybe I'll find something with him and Gino Hernandez and send it to you. Get something off my Plex drive. We'll see.
You should check out some more of this Frankie Lancaster, dude. He does he's the arm drives.
He is a great enhancement talent.
He wrestles circles around Eric Watts in the limited, like when you know Lancaster has to like keep the match going, everything he does makes Watts look so bad.
Lancaster's in this in that thing with there's a general with the last name Stone who's in there, Barry Horowitz, Gene Ligon was pretty good.
The capable dad bods.
Tommy Angel, who had something to him. Cornette thought he had something too, and brought him in to try and be a star. Couldn't do anything out of him, so he just kept being an enhancement talent. The late 80s, early 90s to mid 90s had some really, really good enhancement talent in there. But yeah, this is Shake Them Ropes. Patreon.com/Shake Them Ropes. Support Chris's floating clavicle. With high wattage, and I think I'm gonna put the video on there too. It's audio for right now, but maybe I'll put the video on the Patreon page as well. I don't know how to do that, so I may have to teach myself a bit. But yeah, you can follow me on X at crapgame13. You follow just the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am part of Fight Game Media. I was not on the Dynamite show this week, but about 20 minutes after 7/10 in the evening, Paul Fontaine and I go live and we deconstruct that week's Dynamite like it should never be deconstructed, but it drops in your podcatchers the next morning for free should you choose the audio version. Chris doesn't have a lot to do, but he's going to plug his social media so you can watch him doing nothing for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Go and follow me on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. I'm going to be playing Silk Song. I might try streaming it. I don't know. We'll see. That's all I got. Yeah, that's it.
No music
yeah,
lessons. Okay, okay.
Is this really the best time to pick them up with me?
Well, you know, you tambourine.
One that's maraca. True. I can talk. It also, if you message me, I am probably going to do some sort of series of music lectures. And I'll post it on the Instagram too. Here, like again, I'm kind of laid up, so I'll I'll talk, you know, production theory, these sorts of things, like not necessarily technique per se. There'll be diagrams and stuff, but stay, be on the lookout for some music lectures here on the other side of surgery.
They paired me with someone who moves merchandise. Talk to you later.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends, to breakdowns of individual performers and angles, to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.